chapter 13 as we begin. This is going to be a unique Bible class. I haven't done a lesson exactly like this except one time, which was last Saturday. I was asked to speak at the Fried Hardeman Leadership Workshop at Fried Hardeman University. Kirk Brothers directs that, and David Shannon was one of the speakers. It was an enjoyable day, and they had asked our elders to come and be the featured eldership, because it's for elders and deacons. There were deacons and some others there, but primarily for elders. But they weren't able to go, so Kirk asked me if I would speak for our elders. They wanted to know some of the things that the church here had done, our elders had found that worked well, that other elders might be able to use in their different works. I thought that was a great compliment to our elders, because of all the churches in the brotherhood, they wanted these elders that work with us and among us to sort of serve as a model for other elderships. And I was honored to speak on that occasion. And before I went up there, I emailed all three of our elders and asked them, what do you want me to say? You know, this is really your lesson instead of mine. And so each one of them responded back with different thoughts. And that will be the basis. The first part of our lesson in class this morning will be their thoughts. And that's the reason I wanted you to read with me Hebrews 13, verse 7. The last part of that verse is talking about elders in my judgment. And the last part of that verse says, whose faith follow, considering the end of their conversation. That phrase, whose faith follow. Of course, we follow our elders or preachers or mentors, whoever, even as they follow Christ. 1 Corinthians 11:1, we don't follow anybody except as they follow Christ. But we are to follow the faith of our elders. And as we go through this presentation, that's really what you're seeing. You're seeing their faith in a way that we can imitate. They're out front leading us. And these are some of the things that they had to say on that occasion. And the other elders really seem to appreciate the thoughts. I mentioned Hebrews 13:7. I also wanted to do 1 Thessalonians 5:12 and 13. We beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you. And this will be an opportunity for us to see some insights into the thinking of our eldership, to know them, appreciate them more, and are over you in the Lord, and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. We discussed that passage not too long ago, but I want it to be fresh in our memories as we go through. All right, that was the assignment. What has worked for you and what hasn't? And we'll see as we go through some of these things, of course. You'll recognize as ideas that have started here and sort of grown in other places. And this will also, incidentally, the three different elders responded individually back to me, so they don't know what the other one said. So some of this will be new for them as we go through. They'll recognize their own thoughts, of course, but they may... But they won't recognize, but they'll learn from or appreciate the other thoughts. Here's the first one, and I added a scripture to each slide or each thought so that we would see the basis of it. But this is the first one and where it ought to begin. I think elders must love the Lord, the church, and each other. You know, Christianity begins with love, doesn't it? John 13, 33 and 34 says, "By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." When Jesus was asked, what is the great commandment of the law, he didn't hem and haw and say, well, they're all important, or which they are, or, you know, I couldn't just pick one. No, he immediately said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, mind, and when you put in the other accounts of it, strength, and love thy neighbor as thyself. So it starts with the love for the Lord. And I know as our young people are growing up among us, and there, some of them are in our class this morning, since Chance is at the marriage retreat. We're glad they're in here. Some of them may grow up to be elders or elders' wives one of these days. And I think this is especially important for them as they think about serving the Lord in the future. Love for the Lord, love for the church, and sacrificial love. And for each other in the elders, each other in the eldership. I think that has been a key. Sometimes I joke with the elders, if the church could see these elders' meetings, they would be surprised, you know, because there's joy when they meet and they joke with each other. I mean, they're serious about serious things, but, you know, the three elders we have, they love life. They enjoy each other's company. And that has, I think, made a sort of a lubricant to the machinery through the years to allow them to deal with sometimes difficult situations, and because they do have a respect for each other and they do care about one another. Of course, that's Matthew 22, 36 to 40 on loving God and loving your neighbor as yourself. Here's a second idea. Respect and freedom of expression to talk about how they feel and yet be flexible so the work is not hurt. If you are a leader in any capacity, that would be true. Maybe you're part of a leadership team at your job or your school or even in a family to some degree. You have to have give and take. And because not everybody has the same personality and viewpoints, and here comes a decision to be made or a situation to be handled, and they discuss it. You know, they think about it. And it may be that one of them has a divergent view from the other two. Often that's the case. But they feel free to express, even after another one may have said a different view. The other one said, well, you know, this is the way I see it. And they say what they think. They bring in whatever scriptures that they think are applicable. And that has been really important, I think, not to have a dominant situation where they're, you know, draw the line in the sand and, you know, my way or the highway. They give and take, because even an elder is subject to the eldership, because the eldership, the group, is over the congregation, and an elder in that eldership would be submissive to the will of the majority, of course, with the exception of something that would be unscriptural. But most of the decisions that are made are not right and wrong, but good judgment or better judgment. And the last part, I think, is key, so that the work is not hurt. You know, it's not about egos, and it's not about I want my way. It's about what's best for the church. You know, what's best for these lambs and these sheep and these families that we're watching over? What's going to help them to grow spiritually and to make it to heaven? It's always about the big picture and not the smaller picture. Of course, the smaller picture is important because it plays into the big picture. I put a number of scriptures down. All of those have to do with counsel. And the Proverbs says a lot about wise counsel. Proverbs 12, 15, 15, 22, 19, 20, 20, verse 5, 20, 18, 24, 6, 27, 17. And that's what you really have there, is wise men who are giving their counsel about this particular person's situation or this person's spiritual challenge or this situation that's coming up within the church. And they listen to one another's counsel. And a lot of times they will go ahead and make a decision because there's a consensus. And sometimes they'll say, well, they'll write it in their book. You know, they keep notes every week, but they'll write it in their book. But they won't make a final decision. They'll just sit it, you know, just table it. And maybe the next week, they always read their notes from the previous week when they come back together. And then they say, well, you know, what have we decided to do about that? Or what do you want to do about that? And they may discuss it again. And a lot of times that's when they'll make their decision, after they've had a chance to sleep on it, pray about it, and consider the scriptures further. And sometimes even then they may, you know, it might not be something pressing has to be decided then. And if one has a strong objection to it, then they may just say, well, let's just wait on that. And I think that's a wise approach. So be flexible. Don't demand to have your way, because, you know, every man has his say, not every man gets his way. That's healthy in a leadership capacity. Here's another one. Bible teaching must be sound. I think if there's one reputation that our elders have, and I'm grateful we all are for this, is that, you know, if it's not sound doctrine, we don't want anything to do with it at this church. And our elders feel that way. 1 Timothy 1, 3 to 6 is a passage that we recently studied, where you have the false doctrine that entered into that church at Ephesus, and Timothy had been sent to deal with it. And he said, you know, preach the gospel, teach the gospel. And the end or the aim of that is faith and peace and joy. And Galatians 1, 6 to 10, no other doctrine can bring salvation, but it will bring condemnation. So in the long run, that's one of my constant prayers. You know, you're always thinking about the immediate situation of the church and what we're involved in, but always in the back of a leader's mind, we're thinking about next year and next decade and whatever length of time it is the Lord will allow us to be. And we want the church always to be sound in doctrine. You can see churches that have diversed or gone from the sound doctrine the straight path of the truth over the years, and we don't ever want that to happen here. And a lot of that has to do with decisions and teaching that's done currently and making sure that that is continued to be an emphasis. What has and hasn't worked for us? Well, what has worked, one of them said, is the prison ministry. And that's, we had about 40 baptisms, I think, last year through the prison ministry. The most probably, we don't really know how many were converted through house to house. But that's more than we know of that were converted through house to house. The children's home support, of course, that's something the church has really gotten behind and I think has made a real difference. Don Williams was actually in the class when I presented this, and he indicated how grateful they were at that children's home at North Alabama Christian Children's Home for what our elders have done, really serve as a model church for how to deal with children's home. I think that the model that we have, they have started here, really would work in any church, and they're sort of pioneers in that. And then visitation has been important for us. And then this, and I thought this was quite an insightful statement. This elder said, on the what hasn't worked for us, I guess, I regret that we as elders aren't more active in visiting, teaching, etc. Each year we strive to do better, maybe this will be the year. And I thought about that because Acts 20:19 says, serving the Lord with all humility of mind. You know, isn't that a beautiful statement? Coming from an elder saying, we're not perfect, and we know that we need to do better, and this is one area we want to work on. And they're not just saying that. The visitation program is starting, and they've been working on that now for several weeks, talked about it this last week, and they're changing some things, adding some things in that will make, they think, it more effective, especially from their visiting and the preacher's visiting standpoint. I think that is a great statement. And certainly we, any of us, in whatever capacity that we are engaged in the Lord's work, could do better and want to do better. All right, here's another one. I think the most important thing is we have a plan of work each year. Of course, that was presented 2 weeks ago now. And Proverbs 6:6-8 says the ant prepares in the summer because, you know, God has placed that within the thinking or the behavior of an ant because winter's coming. And we are foolish if we're not as wise as the ant to labor ahead of time and to think about the future. And I appreciate that when our elders started doing a plan of work, which was more than 20 years ago now, very few churches that I knew of did a printed plan of work. I know they had a plan and invited speakers and so forth. But now a lot of churches do that. I got one in the mail from a church in our area this week with just a sticky note on there saying, basically, they had used ours as a motto, and they were grateful for it. And it's a very ambitious plan of work. It looks really good. And I think that reflects back to our elders and their willingness to put that together. And that really, it forces us, in one sense, to think ahead because you can't wait to the last minute if you got to put it in the plan of work. And then when you're working on the plan of work, you know, you're saying, well, we only got gospel meetings for the next 3 years or whatever, and say we need to go ahead and act on that. So they fill in the gaps and they keep that rolling forward. Luke 14:28 says that we're to count the cost, and that's one of the things that this allows us to do. Not only financial cost, but that's a part of it. But count, you know, how we can implement, what we can do, how we can better utilize the workers that God has given us here. Incidentally, if you were not here when the plan of work was presented, there are copies of it. We would encourage you to take one in the entrance areas. So be sure and pick that up and mark on your calendar the events that we have coming up this year and find something in there to be active with. You know, something you say, I can do that. I want to do that. I want to help accomplish this plan of work. And also, if you haven't filled in your worksheet that's in the back of that, and there are also copies on the table of what you're willing to do in the work of the church. We tried to think of everything that someone here can do, you know, from preaching to waiting on the Lord's Supper to teaching a Bible class to sending cards, just everything. Well, there's a checklist, and then that goes to the different deacons, different ones who are involved in those works, and then they know who they can contact to work in the sound room or to lead the Sunday morning prayers or to teach, be a fill-in teacher for whatever class. So be sure and fill that in and turn that in to one of the elders. Even if you've done it in the past, especially if it's been more than a year or so, fill it in again and turn it in, because sometimes, you say there are some new things that you can do, and also you might say, well, I'm willing to try some new things, or I don't want to do something I've done before. So update it. That way it will be fresh and they can use it. All right, here's another one. Get involved in good programs. Don't just open the door for worship. Now remember, it was elders speaking to elders. That was an elder speaking to us, but elders speaking to other elders. But they were saying, don't have a church that you think that you've done it when the doors open at, 9:15 on Sunday morning and everybody can come in and worship, and you lock them back at 12:15 after it's over. That's not doing what God wants us to do as a church. Yes, that's important. We're supposed to worship, but don't just open the doors for worship. Have something for people to be involved in. Have a little vision. 1 Corinthians 15:58, be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, inasmuch as we know that our labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now, this is from a different elder than the previous slide, and I thought it was interesting that they would both say this, and I'm grateful. When it comes to doctrine, stay on the safe side. Don't get in the gray areas. Don't get in the near the ditch. Just stay on the safe side. If it might be wrong, then why would we go in that direction? Proverbs 22:3, 2 John 1:9-11 passages that are along those same lines. Next. Employ good speaking preachers. I told them when I read this one, I was a little uncomfortable talking about this to elders, but I do think what they say is important and would be helpful to other churches. And so the rest of it says, and if you are going to get the best, have an excellent salary and benefit plan for them. 1 Corinthians 1:18-21 talks about the power of preaching. And in my estimate, if you're going to have a congregation that's going to grow, not only numerically, but the faith of the members and the knowledge base of the membership is going to grow, you've got to have an effective communicator, whoever that is, or communicators as we have. You've got to have somebody that is willing to work and is able to say what he's learned in a way that people can get it, and they're not saying, well, I would invite my friend to church, but it'll probably be so boring, No, you need to come hear our preacher, whoever it is, so that they're interested in the gospel, and they know when they come, they're not going to be embarrassed. One of our elders I heard say, and I won't say much about this because I'm not real comfortable talking about this, but I'll say this. One of our elders said when he was a young Christian, he was in another congregation, and they had a really good preacher. He at that time wasn't an elder or a leader in any way, and he said they weren't paying him enough. They were just, pennies. And he said then, if I ever get to be an elder, we're not going to starve our preacher. I can tell you that. And I thought, that's great insight, to be able to say there are expenses and make sure that he doesn't have to worry about that aspect. He can work on his work. That's 1 Corinthians 9:13-17. And I think all the workers are grateful for the health insurance that they provide for us, the retirement plan that we can pay into just like another job. That really is a blessing that most churches don't have. Here's another one. Summer series is a plus. It gives the congregation a chance to hear other speakers. And sometimes we'll hear a speaker on the summer series, for instance, we'll say, that guy, wow, we need to have him in for a gospel meeting or for a Sunday speaker or something. I think you'll see this year some of our Sunday speakers we first heard on the Wednesday night sessions, and some of them are younger guys or in the area, and we try to have the area preacher so that there's a connection with us and the other congregations in sound congregations in our area, so that if we have a friend that lives in Oxford or Piedmont or somewhere, that we want them to come visit with us, of course, but it might be more convenient for them to go to the congregation that's closer to them, so you can say, I heard their preacher, he's really a good speaker or whatever, and that would give an opportunity for there to be a connection. That's 1 Corinthians 3:6. One plants, another waters. God gives the increase. Here's another one. P2P and house to house help Jacksonville, but also benefit other congregations as well. 1 Peter 2:17 says, love the brotherhood. And the idea there was this, you know, don't only be self-absorbed in the work of a local congregation, also have a bigger picture. And I think that's what this elder was saying, is that yes, we're have authority and work and want to build up the local congregation, but we are a part of a great brotherhood. And if we can do something that will help other churches at the same time as it's helping us, then why wouldn't we do that? I think the marriage retreat is a good example of that. And we started that just for us years ago. And then it was going well. And they said, well, why don't we invite others to come? We're already bringing a speaker in. You know, so we did. And now it's over 1,000 people that are there. And a lot of churches are benefiting because their families are strengthened because this church, these elders had a vision enough to say, let's do this. It'll help us, but let's also include others. The marriage retreat, speaking of that, should be supported by all congregations in the Southeast, one elder said. That's a pretty bold statement, but then here's his reason for it. How many churches have had a problem with divorce? Well, you'd probably say pretty close to 100% in our culture, in our world. So the marriage retreat can help to strengthen those marriages, Matthew 19:6-9, and thus help churches, 1 Timothy 1:5. Have a good sound youth program, one of them said. They will be the church of tomorrow. So invest in young people. Don't be afraid to say, you know, our young people are worth this amount of dollars to do whatever it is that they need to do. Or they're worth being more than just a line item on a budget. They're worth investing ourselves in and making an emphasis in the church, because so many churches lose their young people. We don't want to be like that. We want all of our young people to remain faithful. When they leave us, we want them to have so much grounding and knowledge and faithfulness that they're effective. You know, they're comfortable leading if they're young men in the worship. They're comfortable being involved in whatever capacities their talents allow. And they have a good grasp of what the Bible teaches about the Church of Christ, about the gospel plan of salvation, about how to worship God acceptably and why certain activities would be wrong in worship or would be wrong behavior, morally speaking. That's 1 Timothy 4:12. Invest in programs the church needs. Romans 14:19. Acts 20:28. Think about the needs of the church and then say, how can we meet those needs? Is there a problem within the congregation? Well, there are always situations where a church could be better. Well, how can we address that? What could we do that would help that demographic in the church or that issue in the church? Be it young parents or be it older members, widows, whatever it is, how can we help them? So invest. I thought this was an insightful comment. Don't spend a lot of time worrying about whether there are funds or where the funds are there or not. God will provide. I think this separates our eldership from a lot of elders that I've heard of and some I guess I've been around. Philippians 4:19 says, but my God shall supply all your need through His riches in Christ Jesus. God supplies needs. And sometimes elders are reluctant to do something. They'll say, how much is that going to cost? You know, or we don't have the money for that. Well, that is a consideration, but that's not the way our elders generally operate. I tell the story that I've told a number of times away from here. I don't know that I've ever told it here. This is from the early days, and most of you were not here back then, when we were in the other building, old building, built in 1960. Had two air-conditioned units, and one of them went out. As memory serves, and I could be wrong, but it was like a Monday or Tuesday when it went out, and one of the elders got up on Wednesday night and said, well, you probably can tell, this was in the summer, you probably can tell that one of our air-conditioned units isn't working. And we got $4.44 in the bank. And if you can give any extra on Sunday, please do, and we'll replace that unit. So Sunday rolled around. I don't remember the number, but I remember that no missionary was unsupported that month. Electric bills were paid. Preacher was paid. Everything that normally happens happened. And enough was given to replace that unit. And then, it was only a few weeks later, The other unit went out. We were doing a little bit better at that time. And so one of the elders got up and said, well, the other unit's gone out, and we got $15.71 in the bank. And if you could give any extra Sunday, then please do. And I told the elders, you know, if you want a church to give, they'll give for air conditions. They might not give for missions, but they'll give for air conditions. And so it was given, and we bought the air condition and everything. But the reason I said that is simply to say, our elders don't believe in putting the money in a bank for another rainy day. You know, it's like, it's given for a purpose. What's the purpose? To build up the Lord's church, to save souls. And as I was preparing this, to speak to those elders, and I said this, I don't know how much, you know, I don't know that you could put a per capita of how much it takes to convert a person, but let's just say you could take $1,000 and invest it in some way that would convert a soul. You know, literature or paying a missionary or, I don't know, whatever method. But that $1,000 could or would convert one person. Or maybe it's 10,000. I don't know the number. Okay, if it's 1,000, just for easy math, and you got $10,000 in a bank that you're not using, that's 10 souls that could have been added to the kingdom that we did not invest in because we did, well, what are we going to do with that? What's it given for? Now, I know that there are times when you put money aside. Maybe you got a building program you're saving up for. Save a ton of money in interest if you have the money to invest rather than borrow. Same thing with house to house. Would the elders put some money back in case we ever have to have the last issue? If something were to happen, you know, that's an expensive print bill. So they have enough to pay for the one final issue. If it ever came to that, we didn't have the funds coming in, so this church wouldn't go into bankruptcy. I think that's wise. And if that never comes to it, then that money will pay for one more issue at the end. Hopefully there'll never be an end, but if there were, I think that's wise. But what they're saying is, don't worry about the money. You know, if God wants something to happen, then He's got the money to make it happen. You know, have a little bit of faith in God and have a little bit of vision and reach out and you know, our contribution, I went back and looked, and it was $10,020 looks like last Sunday. One Sunday you gave $10,000. That's not an unusual Sunday. Nobody said, you know, we need extra money for anything as far as I know. You go back, 20 years ago, even adjusting for inflation, the contribution here has just continued to climb. And I've told the elders before, I really believe that's an indicator of the congregation and how they feel about how the elders are using those funds. You know, we don't give to the elders, we give to the Lord. But there is a sense in which, you know, there's good things going to happen with this. I'm willing to give generously. People don't give generously to put in a bank. I mean, they can do that, you know. They can put in a bank, but they'll give generously if this is going to send the gospel around the world. This is going to do something important. I started preaching, so I'll go on to the next one. Don't save church funds for a rainy day. It could burn up before that day. You know, the Lord's going to come back one day, and all the money and all the church banks is going to do what? It'll burn up. It won't do any good then, so why are we doing it? I have talked to elders at PTP, this man said, that have very large bank accounts. And he did not think that was a good idea. Matthew 25:18, 1 Corinthians 4:2, be good stewards. Here's another one on the finances. I have also been asked, where do we invest our contributions? And the answer is we don't. We spend it for the Lord's work. 1 Corinthians 3:3, Philippians 3:19. All right, that's what our elders said. And I talked about that in a little bit more detail there in some cases. But then the second part, I said, I'm going to give you my observations about our elders. And because sometimes people don't see themselves as other people see them, and sometimes they won't say what somebody else might be willing to say. I don't know how accurate this is. This is one man's judgment, but I'm going to say one reason I enjoy working under these elders and with these elders. I think there's about five of these. First one is they are yes men. Now, we use that phrase with a negative connotation of somebody that's just, as the old country boy said, anybody's dog that'll hunt with him. You know, they'll go along with anybody just for peace. No, that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about here is you get an idea. You know, what if we did this? You know, I'm an idea person. I enjoy thinking and planning. And look, I don't ever go into an elders meeting thinking, well, they're going to shoot this down for sure. You know, they're going to say no. They're going to say, we never did that before. Or how much is that going to cost? Or that sounds like a lot of work. Or no, I go into an elders meeting. That doesn't mean they always say yes. Sometimes they say no because there's good reasons for it. But I don't go into an elders meeting where I think they're going to shoot this down for sure. I might as well not even put this work into it. No, their normal response is, that sounds like a good idea. Why don't we try that? You know how incredibly freeing that is to preachers and to members to have elders that are willing to try things and do things and be innovators in a good sense? Very free. Otherwise, it would stifle creativity and, you know, the church would just stay in the same ruts, in my judgment. Mark 9:23, all things are possible with God. Mark 10:27, John 4:35, lift up your eyes to the fields are white unto harvest. Another one, God deserves excellence. I appreciate this about our elders. They want things to look good and to be good and not to cut corners and be mediocre or mediocrity. Ecclesiastes 9:10. I remember early on, this happened several times with House to House, a printer would say, you know, we could save money if we printed this on newsprint instead of on, you know, this enamel paper. And elders said, it's not going to look very good. You know, it's not going to be read as well on cheaper paper. Let's keep it looking good. And they've been willing all the way through, even though that, you know, excellence costs more. But in the long run, the investment is better in the returns because it looks good. People, even junk mail today, you know, looks good. You know, you got to have something stand out. Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatsoever the hand finds it to do it with thy might. As much as envy is, Romans 1:14-16, Colossians 3:23, not as men pleasers, but pleasing God. Not micromanagers. This is one that I have appreciated and I think has been very important down through the years. I hear about other preachers in horror stories, and maybe they exaggerate that. I'm sure they do sometimes. But, you know, keeping them in the office at a certain time and so many hours, and, you know, if you can't trust your preacher to do his work, then get another preacher, you know. You need somebody, because it's like the farmer. Somebody asked a farmer, what time do you go to work in the morning? He said, I don't go to work. I get up and it's all around me, you know. It's not that way with preachers. You get up, it's all around you. I mean, I'm working driving down the road. I'm working, you know, waiting in line at Walgreens. I'm writing cards to somebody. I mean, there's just work all around you. If you got a self-starter, then, you know, let him adjust his schedule to be able to do the work, as long as the work's getting done. And I appreciate the fact that they let us do our jobs, not just the preachers, but others. Of course, there's different situations. Some jobs are tied to a phone or tied to a situation, but others are more productivity, get it done. 1 Timothy 4:12-13, 2 Timothy 4:5. Here's another one. Launch out into the deep. You know, some things are going on that these elders are over that would be, to speak frankly, would be scary to a lot of elders. You know, to be responsible for writing a check for sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars for this or that. Well, but they're not afraid to do that. Luke 5:4, they launch out. And most of those things started small and they grew to the point where, you know, they are today. But they weren't afraid to say, well, let's try it. Let's see what happens. And they didn't blink later to say, well, this has gotten too hard. And then this one, keep morale high. I think that's important in any group, but especially in a congregation. Our elders seem to do a good job at this of, you know, just keeping the congregation moving along, you know, dealing. I added these next slides. They didn't actually say, well, they didn't say this one either. I just observed this, but I expanded this a little bit. 1 Thessalonians 5:14, Hebrews 12:12 on that point. There's three or four ways that they keep or we can keep morale high. Express appreciation. You know, say thank you when somebody does something. Notice what people are doing. That helps. Number two, I'll come back to that one. Number two, highlight successes. You know, I like it when our elders get up and they talk about, you know, what work was done last year and the people that were involved in it. Romans 13:7, honor to whom honor. Be peacemakers. You know, you don't have a group of 200 people or even a family of four people or however many. You don't have difficulties getting along sometimes. And so the elders, they're peacemakers. They work things out. Matthew 5:9, we're all on the same page wanting the same thing, go to heaven. So, you know, you can get past personality differences if you keep that in mind. Then serve as a buffer. There are so many things. You know, I've worked with these elders for 22 years or something. Not the same ones, but mostly the same ones those years. And I don't even know everything, you know, of course. But I'm in a lot of the meetings that they have. And they're a buffer around the sheep in the congregation. You know, things that may be going on. You know, there's nothing going on now. But through the years, you know, some years back, I remember thinking, you know, the church doesn't even know they're having to deal with this. And the church is worshiping God, you know, enthusiastically. And I know those elders didn't sleep well the night before because they were taking the brunt of it. And they were dealing with it and patiently. And got us through difficult times sometimes. Serve as a buffer. That is such an important thing because the little sheep can get scattered and they can become discouraged and they can't handle what, you know, the older sheep, especially the elders, can handle. Acts 20:28, Titus 1:5-9, 1 Peter 5:2, I'll talk about that shepherding aspect of elders. All right, now I'm going to go back, and I'm going to go through these really quickly because I only have 4 minutes. I won't be able to get through all these, but I'll start. I just want to express some appreciation to people in this room and others in this church that aren't in here right now. Thank you. First to our elders for serving the people of God week in and week out. Thank you for making sacrifices of time, energy, sleep, and concern, often behind the scenes. Thank you for caring about the local church, loving what God loves and prioritizing what God prioritizes. Thank you for going on if you receive more complaints than compliments. That would be true of any leader in some cases. Thank you, song leaders, for choosing songs carefully and for singing with enthusiasm. You know, as important as the preaching is in a good service, the singing is equally important. It doesn't, not as long as the sermon, but it is so important. We're praising God. It ought to be really a highlight of the service. Thank you for doing deacon work, deacons, that others might not notice. Thank you, young people, for serving God faithfully when others your age do not. 1 Timothy 4:12. Thank you, widows, for worshiping God even if you have to sit by yourself in the assembly. Thank you, faithful women, for doing so much that keeps the church humming along that we men may not even notice. Thank you, tech workers, who make it seem seamless and easy when it's not. Thank you to those at home, even now, who maintain their connection to God even when they cannot get out to worship. Thank you, office workers, who do so much that means so much, but often does not get noticed. Thank you, single Christians, for finding your niche in the church and realizing God does not frown on your marital status. Thank you, older members, who set such a great example in showing how to take Christ with you throughout life. Thank you, moms, for making your children the priority God makes them, and for patiently training, teaching, showing, loving. Thank you, grandparents, for your supporting role, and sometimes for stepping in your grandchild's spiritual training. Thank you, dads, for stepping up and being the man that God needs you to be in your home when so many abandon their post in our society. Thank you, caregivers, for not flagging in the sometimes thankless task that has become your daily regimen. Thank you, singers, for singing. Thank you, prayer leaders, for thoughtful, earnest, meaningful prayers. Thank you, faithful members, for always being there with a smile. Thank you, single agains, who overcame a great challenge and are showing your faith that faith can withstand anything. Thank you, new members, for adding life and vitality to our congregation. Thank you, soul winners, for doing the most anyone can do. Thank you, soul winners, for your priorities. Thank you, soul winners, for your courage. Thank you, Bible readers, for feeding on the Word each day. Thank you, prayers, for blessing the church and the world from your closet. Thank you, workers, for shining the light of the gospel in the workplace. Thank you, teachers and preachers, for the hours you invest in time for your class and your sermon to make them exceptional. Thank you for loving God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Your praise, church, goes to the heart of God. He loves your voice, your songs, your offering. You have the rapt attention of the greatest audience in the universe. He loves your hard work. He treasures your prayers that no one else sees. Think the work that you are doing is important. The life you are living is extraordinary. Thank you for being in this class this morning. We will be dismissed until the worship hour.